let's start officially. There's no one coming else. Udo, you wanted to make an introduction, right?
It is an introduction in our subject of today. It is only an example. It's nothing to follow. It's only an introduction to maybe not to all of you, because there might be colleagues who are much more experienced than we are. I show a bit about what we are doing in our little laboratory. Okay, like this. So first you need water samples. Some of you may know these bottles. It's only an example that you can work with service companies doing water analysis. Here in Europe, a lot of colleagues are working with this Lavaris from Germany. We did in former times as well, but with some results, I started to have doubts. And so at this time, we had our first little equipment, and I compared. Then I made parallel tests with this laboratory and with other laboratories, and nothing was really satisfying, because I always had doubts if it's correct. And nowadays, we are working with this little beer bottles, you see. This is the old type of beer bottles with, in some companies, had a revival, renaissance. And so they have good advantages. They are glass bottles. They are of dark glass. We can use them often. We can clean them very well. And we have them in three different volumes, as you see. The only thing you have to do is you have to identify them. So therefore these little numbers are glued here to this. This is not very elegant, but it works. So what you need, what maybe something is for beginners, what a lot of people from you may have, is mobile equipment. In this case, it's measuring of conductivity and pH. They have to be calibrated from time to time. Not as they deliver quite good results, and they give you always as well the temperature, which is important. Then there are tiny photometers. Here, those from Hana Instruments, an American company, is called Checker. They are quite good, and big advantage is they are very mobile. You need what you see in the picture, this little photometer, the glass, and a little, how it's called, some reagent in a second, or oh, it's called in English, and
reagent.
The agent, yeah.
Reagent.
Reagent, okay. And then there are bigger photometers. Hans was talking about one or two. This is one from Hana Instruments. This is specially configured for agriculture. I am quite satisfied with this. With one exception, this is a phosphate. They say they can measure phosphate with this, but it's not true. It's really not working. I complained, and because I made it parallel tests, and I know the very few content in our swimming pool here near our office. And so they are totally wrong. So I don't use the phosphate, because the others are quite good. This from Hach. This is measurement for water transparency. Hach Lange is a German company, very expensive but very good stuff, very good material. For our purposes, I think it's too expensive what they have. Every time in December, there is the possibility to buy equipment from Hach, because the representation of this company here in Portugal makes always a reselling of used equipment. If it's laboratory equipment, you have to be careful, but it is so good and it is checked again. Once I bought this measurement of transparency, which is a very good indicator of a lot of things, and a lot of colleagues don't use it. It's measuring the turbidity in NTU, I think it's a unit, and it's quite good, and it's as well mobile. So you need a lot of staff of glasses and other things. And we do so much checking that about once a week, a colleague is coming and working in our laboratory. There are other photometers. This is for hardness. And you see, you can measure a lot of things. For example, on the upper board, you see silica, high range and low range, or you can look for iron, which is as well sometimes important to see if there's enough for the plants. The most important is you have to keep your data fresh. You have to take note what you're measuring, and you have to do it in a way that you are able to go back in time, because to compare measurements is very important and very helpful. So we can take note, but the best is to store it in a program, or at least in an Excel sheets. As you know, we have our Pond Analyst program. And then I can compare and go back to 10, 15 years ago and see what happened. Yeah, this was meant only as a small introduction. And I think this is meant as an entrance into the subject, as Stefan has started to ask around, what do you have? I thought it might be interesting that someone of us in this shows what we are using. So now I can stop. Yeah, questions about it?
Well, the control of the water in an existing pond, it's quite in uphill, unnötig. It doesn't give you results in an existing pond. You know, the only thing we do, it's to control the water which we fill the pond. That's important. Do you have good water for fill the pond, or do you have bad water? Usually in Switzerland and also in Germany, you must control only the phosphates. The nitrates are not very important, because our limited part is always phosphate, and when you have when you don't have much phosphate, well, the limit is about 30 microgram, and then the water is good. Well, maybe in other country there is the problem with some bad elements. Huh? I don't know what you have when you have sulfates and things like that. That can be a problem. That can destroy palm.
To be honest, I have a different opinion about testing of existing pond water, because in my case, is for example that I often have to add urea because there's missing nitrogen, because the plants are eating up nitrogen. So I have to see if there's a limiting factor besides phosphate, or is there any other factor which maybe is in limitation and it's not phosphorus. Therefore, I'm testing usually the ammonium, which I think from my point of view has to be quite correct, because it can be poisonous as well for aquatic organisms, even when the plants are still growing very well. Nitrate, I test once in a while, but only if I have a feeling that something's going wrong. Usually it should be all working to be completely, the nitrogen should be oxidated directly passed to nitrate, and nitrate is something which can accumulate, which tells me something, or can be reduced by consumed, which tells me something. So I think these tests, for example, are very important. Another important test is the carbon hardness, which can get reduced by biologic consumption, which can be very tricky for the pH, jumps in the pH. And in here in the south, in Ibiza, for example, there's such an evaporation that easily some nutrients can be accumulated in the water by evaporation. And if we add always the same mineralized water, we get to levels which we don't want. So I think testing of all these parameters and much more is interesting. Iron, everything which can limit the water. We have in Ibiza, for example, very often extreme high sulfate values. Okay, but this is something which doesn't go away easily in the pond. It doesn't raise. It doesn't enter usually only with filling water. Or if we have jet-based stones, maybe. But I think it doesn't go in solution. Only above 2,000 micrograms, milligrams. But what we have, for example, 500 or 1,000 milligrams of sulfate, we can find. And this should be a problem. And there's a big discussion where the problems are starting.
Okay, this one. I agree with Stefan that that I'm of the opinion as well to check existing ponds. But I have another reason to do. I have learned so much by testing the existing ponds, and I'm test as well a lot of not only when something is going wrong or might go wrong. I test always, and this is an interesting point because it gives me a huge amount of information, and when I have a huge amount of information which I can compare along the year or along years, and looking to my data, I learned so much, especially in the relationship between water chemistry and plants. This is very important, because when we have, sure, Hans, we check always the filling water. If there's any company in the world doing swimming ponds, it's not checking the filling water before starting anything. I guarantee that I would say doing very wrong, and I would go so far that it's not correct, it's not professional, not checking the filling water before you do anything. So for me, it's a proof of professionalism. So we are checking a lot, and we check much more than we need, and we spend money for the men in the laboratory to have these information. But this does only make sense when we can work with the data, when we can put it into a system where we can compare. I know that you, Hans, have a laboratory. I know that Stefan is working with a laboratory. And Hans, you can say something now. but I would be interested if anybody else is working with a laboratory or at least with equipment. Hans?
Maybe we must make a difference between the different category of natural swimming ponds, swimming pool. I think it's always it's known also in the other country the five categories, 1, 2, and 3. They are without any gravel filter, without any filter. And category 4 and 5, they are with gravel filters. When I say it's not necessary to control the ponds, or it doesn't give good results in the category 4 and 5. The ponds with gravel filters. I made a lot of controls of this ponds, and we see always the same thing. There are not much phosphate in the level of phosphate is mostly the same, because, and also the other nutrients, because the filter especially the filter and the biofilm will consummate everything who is in. Everything who can the biofilm and the filter can consummate is in the biofilm. And so in the water you don't find anything. And the biofilm and the filter, they are consummating very, very quickly. And 2 days later, when you put the water in and the filter is working, 2, 3 days later, the phosphate are eliminated. Well, more or less, depend the filter. But when you control the ponds without any filter, that's quite different. But then there you have the water plants consuming the nutrients directly from the water, like Chara, like Ceratophyllum and things like that, then you can have problem when you have a limited element, when you have limited element or when you have too much from one element. And then I think it can make sense when you control. But in Switzerland, we built one or two a pond in the year without any filters, category 1 or 2, and the other they are always with the filter. And then, phosphor is always the limited element. And then you must use the very good photometers. You must use the photometers who going under 50 microgram. When you have more than 50 microgram, more or less, it's out of the limits. It's not good. You can't use, and you must reduce the phosphate in the ponds. You must put them under 50 microgram. Well, excluding the ponds without filters. That's the problem. Or and when you use, well, you say who do you say control the filling water? That's absolutely correct. In Switzerland we are always frustrated because the water here is so good. We don't have any problem with phosphates. I don't know why, but it is so. But in other countries, I think in Iberia, well, but also in Portugal. Also, when I were once there with it also controlled, and the water, it was excellent. It's incredible. You don't use any filter, and you have very good ponds there without any filter, without any plants. That was in the north, right? It wasn't here.
For me, it's a little bit surprising to see the different opinions. Udo, machst du dein Mikro aus? And maybe we should not generalize so much that one has to do it this way or one has to do it that way. Because I think as we have different areas of the world where we are working, maybe there's as well a different behavior of the systems of these artificial ecosystems in the different parts of the world. Maybe, Hans, and I think I'm right, you are in a very lucky situation that you can work with excellent water, which has always enough hardness, for example, which is not loaded too much with nutrients and so on. But we are working, for example, in Portugal and as well in other places, sometimes really with water qualities where we don't have as a limiting factor the phosphates, but the carbonates, for example. And there you have a totally different situation. So the system, what you are installing, is behaving in a different way. This is one thing. And maybe because of the different climate areas where we are working, we have as well, once again, a different behavior. For example, the evaporation tax might cause a different behavior because we are losing a lot of water and we don't have a hydrologic balance along the year, which is equilibrated. What you have in Switzerland, or maybe you have an excess of water. Now, excess, what does it mean? If you have too much, that you have too much water. So you have a lot of rainfall in summer as well, and then you have a surplus of water. But in the Mediterranean, for example, we don't have the situation, so we have to add water along the summer, and in bad conditions this can be half of the volume of the whole pond system. So when we have then a certain water quality as well, the system is behaving in a certain way, so there might be interactions we have to respect. And I think it is good that everybody of us has an opinion and has his experience. And I know Hans has a very long experience. Udo as well has a very long experience, and some others too. But we shouldn't say one has to do it like this. I think we can say it is working where I am under these conditions, but to say everybody else has to do it that way too, I think there we can be easily wrong, because we sometimes we do not know so pretty well the conditions where other colleagues are working. For example, I don't know anything about the US, and there you might have in front of you a very, very different situations where you have to deal with. From my point of view, the geology is a very, very important fact to respect. And there, once again, Switzerland as well, big parts of Austria have excellent water qualities due to the geology where the colleagues are working. But when you have not so big advantages, for example, in volcanic areas and so on, you can have a lot of trouble. And there, I think it is very difficult to say my system will behave always like that. Maybe not. As a hopefully yes, but maybe not.
So there we go. What the colleagues from the US are working with? How do you start a project?
Oh, we always test. And we have very diverse phosphate readings here. We have everything from pretty good water to stuff that's horrible. You know, you can walk on the phosphates on some of the water. I personally don't do the testing. Ryan does the testing. He uses a photometric device. I don't really know what it is. We also send it out to laboratories. I don't have any light to shed on this, but we do test fill water. We also test and monitor the water in the pond or natural pool during the course of the season. Some of our customers don't, and you know that's okay because they're not complaining about anything. So, but if they are, then we're going to go test it.
Thank you. Talking about laboratories. Our problem in Portugal is we can't do it with local laboratories because they are so focused on the routine, another thing, drinking water, that a lot of things they can do are not useful for us. And this is, I think it's as well a big issue here in Europe, and it's an issue for IOB and IOB group. And in my time as president, this was an issue, and this is something what I gave to Stefan. There's a huge problem with adding phosphorus into the tubing, into the hoses, into the public grid of water distribution, especially in England. So they are gone by the Brexit, but in other places as well, because they add phosphate to restore leakage in old iron tubes. And I think there should be an initiative. For me, it's pollution, because they do so much that it goes out, and it's a problem for the treatment plants and so on. I think this is an issue where IOB should go and look for partners to make an initiative at the European Parliament that this technique will be stopped, because the numbers are so high. Unfortunately, we do not have anybody here from UK, but in other places, in some areas of Germany, I think it's as well the case that they add phosphorus, and this is a big issue. Okay, so in our point, laboratories we don't have, because they're using routines which are for drinking water, and they're not useful, and therefore we came out to make our own laboratory.
We will.
Okay, thank you, James.
Yeah, Udo, yeah. Just to dovetail on that, local laboratories here also can be a problem. They don't understand what we're trying to do. And we actually send water samples to Austria.
It's not very helpful when you have to wait 4 weeks.
No. We overnight it. We get the turnaround in 2 days.
Really?
Yeah, it's really not a problem. It's a small world.
Okay. Well, this instrument, well, they are, for the moment, for to buy them, they are, you they cost about $2,000 or €2,000, something the same thing. And then you have a good instrument, and when you calculate the ingredients, what you have to put in, it costs, for one sample, it costs about €1, $1, you use. And when you make when you test it, you have to buy, I don't know how much you have to buy, you pay $50 or $100, and you can calculate yourself how much samples you must do for pay this instrument. When you are 10 or 20 partners, then you buy one, and then I think in 1 year it is amortized. And you need and then you have that what you need, you know.
That's, yeah, sometimes you're looking only at the equipment, but you have to look at the work. And when you do a lot of testing, you need someone to do it. I can't do it by myself, because I have other duties. And so it's not only the equipment cost, it is as well the labor costs.
Yeah.
I think
somewhere has to do with it, but for one sample, when you make 10 samples, all the same thing, you need 15 minutes. In 15 minutes, you can do 10 samples. But somewhere, when you are 20 partners or something like that, one have to do it. And it's interesting. It's also, it's also the housewife can do it. It's possible. Well,
even housewife can do it.
Young boy can do it.
He is no housewife.
And it's not complicated. It's not complicated. Well, that's but you must buy a good one. Well, the Hachlange, they are not for drinking water. They are for Kläranlagen, for wastewater, and there the concentration you can measure is a little bit too high. You must take an instrument to have from this size. Well, this 100 millimeter or at least 50 millimeters cuvette, then it's a good photometer. And they cost also, you can buy them. I bought mine in the States, huh? 1 year before, it cost about $1,500 or something like that. You can buy a used one, because the new one, they are the principle is always the same, but the new one, they are much more electronic. It's a half a computer in, and you must it's much more easier. But the old one, they are also exact. Huh?
Thank you, Hans. Let's go around the world. Let's ask Italy, our colleague Nicolo, what he is doing, and maybe then as well to Greece, how it's with the water tests and with the checking. Nicolo.
Yes, of course, we always do the test of the filling water, and usually we also do one or two analyses on the existing pond during the year. But me, I don't have any instrument. I always send to laboratory, and we are using a laboratory near a colleague of mine in Tuscany, which have a good precision with phosphates. And usually it's always necessary to do testing, because all in countryside where they use local wells to fill the water, to fill the swimming pools, the wells can have any kind of water quality. And so it's very necessary to do that. Or, but when we use the water of the network, sometimes we just, you can find on the internet or the water quality of the net, which I know it's not the real water quality coming out of the sink, the real water you are using, but you have an average quality of the water you are using. And yes, so sometimes, yeah. But sometimes we just start to do the project according to the water quality we find in the internet of the one who is managing the water. But if we see something strange, of course we go to do the analysis. But at least the phosphates. Sometimes we do only the phosphates if we have an online analysis of the net, of the water of the net, public net, and we do just the phosphates. But if we take the water of a well, we always do analysis, of course. Mm-hmm. And also at least once a year in the existing ponds.
Mm-hmm. And you are mentioning a problem, or it's a problem and an advantage. We have in the European legislation, which is the same in all countries of the European Community, that is forcing the water supplier of the mains water to make analysis every 3 months and to publish them in the internet for every region where they take water. This is all the same in all European countries. The problem is that they nearly never have any phosphate values because the legislation is like this, that they do not have to check. And this is as well because it is helping the water companies to hide the high phosphate amount they're adding, not everywhere and not in places where it's very good water, as in Austria and in Switzerland. Switzerland is not European Community, but it has very good water. As well, a lot of areas of Germany have very good water. But as they suppress the values of phosphate, we as well have to do what Nicolo is saying to see what is happening with the phosphate. Thank you, Nicolo. Nikostotos, you have worked a long time in Switzerland, but if you're now working in Greece, you check water as well.
Yes, in Greece we have the opportunity to work together with an institute, a technical institute like a university. and we made a lot of water analysis there, and also we were working comparing those findings that we have from the water that comes for the swimming pond that we created, and also the water of the swimming pond comparing it with some natural lakes that there were there in Crete, in Chania. The, let's say, problem that we faced, it was the water was not constantly the same source. And one of the biggest problems is with the amount of chlorine. But sometimes it was really huge, and it was really, really visible in the waters. Unfortunately, I was about only, let's say, 2 years when we started the pond, and then I left and came to Switzerland. I am till now in really good contact with the client, with the person that has the pond in Crete, and we're good friends, and every year we speak about the pond. Till now, with, let's say, no maintenance, it's the water quality and everything is amazing. So that's a positive thing. Here in Switzerland, I'm starting, let's say, I hope now in 2021, start with natural ponds. Analysis, we just make an analysis from one that it will be constructed in Liechtenstein. And we did the analysis with a private institute. And actually the reason that I'm attending right now in that meeting was really important for me to find a way to do it alone, because Udo, as you already said, it's not easy to trust the results. And the second thing is that they don't use a lot of results for the swimming pools. Of course, in Switzerland, the situation is a little bit different. I'm speaking more about the ideas, the information that I have from Greece. So those are right now the information that I can give you about that.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Stefan, maybe you give now your little example of what you are doing. You prepared some pictures?
Yeah, I think it's important to talk about a little bit of the experience. I think a lot of us will have the same experience. That we send the probes to the laboratory, and if we send the same probe to various laboratories, we don't get the same results quite often. Which leads to the conclusion that all these photometers, they work well, but how accurate is it? And how accurate do we need it as well? For example, with the phosphates we have as well in Ibiza and Spain, the problem that there are nearly no laboratory, or I don't know anyone who is going in these low measurements of phosphates, because we are the only ones asking for it. But I had as well the experience with various laboratories in Germany, where I sent the samples to, and the results were not the same. And sometimes it was like more or less impossible, the result which I receive, for example, a result that there must be a lot of phosphate in the water, but my test said nearly nothing. Perfectly correct. The water was transparent. There was nearly no biofilm. Plants growing well. So as well, other limnologists told me, with this water, I showed the pictures, it's impossible that it has so much phosphorus, or there would be some chemical in there which would make a good result in the swimming pool, but with higher phosphates, which I don't believe in. When I sent it to other laboratory, the values were correct. So I think, especially in the phosphates, it's very important we have correct measurements. And sometimes the phosphate, these photometers don't do their job very well. In other values, for me, it was important to really understand in which range the water is. For example, in nitrates, I think it's not so important to know it's 1 or 2 or 30 or 31.5 milligrams. But it should be clear, is it 2 or is it close to 5 or 30 or 100? And with a lot of these cheap tests, like for the aquarium, the results are so inaccurate. You always have to judge, is this orange more yellowish orange, or is it not that? Because, well, some of these tests have the possibility to have the alternative test with the coloration of the water. Sometimes it's missing, so the coloration of the water influences completely the color of the result. Result, I bought first of all, photometer and phosphates, which something in between, not the fast, the small checker from Hanna, it's this one, a little bit bigger one. I have very good experience with that. The results were close or similar to some of the laboratories, and making tests, comparing tests with others, this one worked well. I got for a lot of other measurements this multi-photometer, which does for me a very good job. Can test more or less everything what you can find in water. This is the list of elements you can test. But if the accuracy is really so high or not, I'm not sure. In phosphates, it shows wrong results, too high. Higher than it's possible from the result of the pond. But it's good. For example, here I made some tests. This is sulfate in a water which is okay, 76 milligram sulfate. This is nitrate, but even though the color is strong, well, yes, the problem is, in this case, it's fine value or low range, and it only tests between 0 and 1 milligram. And here I have more. So I have to mix it with destilline water to get to the range where I need it. The problem here is it's a little bit annoying that, of course, each pond works in a different level of nitrates. And sometimes I have to do various tests to get a valuable result because it's either too high or too low for this test. But it's the beauty is at least it goes gives constant measurements. So if it says now it's 3 milligrams, if I do the test again, it's still 3. It's not 10 or something. Very important, and it works very continuously. How exactly, I don't know, is ammonium. This water, there's nearly none. Here, I would have to, from my point of view, I have to check to add ammonium if nitrate is low, but only then. And this was nitrate, which was 0.01, very low, so it's not very important. I'm testing now quite a lot of elements, for sure not always all of them, because knowing your creatures, you know that a certain pond has a certain behavior. And there are some values like the total hardness, for example, which in my case is hardly changed. The sulfates, they go slowly up, for example, if there's evaporation, and we always use the same filling water. Or it's going down if it's diluted with rainwater. Values which in this pond are stable, I usually don't measure every time, each time. I just check and control once a while. And for more important, are the values which are moving. That's, well, for me, it's important to see that there's a certain constants in the values, or if there's movement, then there's movement, but I can trust that at least maybe if the value of 5 is not correct, it could be 10. But if it's an element which in this range works well, then I'm already happen. If it's continuously similar, great. It helped me to understand my creatures, why they behave, how they do. And it's interesting to see changing coloration of the water. Microalgae are growing. Why? Checking the measurements, sometimes I see clearly the result, where it comes from. But this is more or less is my experience. I met you when sometimes it's getting a bit complicated, some tests, and you have to understand, do you really want it? So complicated. This, for example, is what you need to test with this test. You see it? We can all see them or not?
No, not yet. Claudia can see it. Okay.
Yeah, I see it.
Okay. This is, for example, testing nitrate. First, you have to fill a sample with 20 milliliters. Add a tablet of this and powder. You have to shake for a minute and then let it sediment. Once it's sedimented, you fill it into the test cube and you see what Hans is saying. This, for example, has maybe 10 or what is it? 16 millimeters diameter. So for sure, it's not as correct as it would be 100 millimeter. This is then the test done. And here you see the water was moved over there, then added another tablet, waiting 10 minutes, and you get the result. And the result was 0.01. No, it was nitrate. It was too nitrate was too high. But this is a value, for example, nitrate. If you know where this pond or this special project is working, usually you have quite stable nitrate values. But if they are low, they can be consumed completely, and then it's getting tricky. So I think it should be checked. If you have constantly quite stable 10 or plus milligram, then you don't have to test each time because it's quite a lot of work. What I always test is here, you see, for example, in the back, you see ammonium, you need two types of tablets and this kind of test, and this is sulfate, you need just one certain tablet, and you always, in this case, you have to wait 10 minutes, but it's much faster than the nitrate test. And the nitrate test is a little bit the pain in the bum. But at least it gave me good results, because with what I had before with the aquarium tests, it was so difficult to understand. Is it 20 or 40 milligrams? And in this range, so unclear, and if it's low, like 2 or 3 milligrams or 1 milligram, you can't judge. Forget about it. Good. This is my experience. Any questions to that? Right, we have maybe... this is the... It has 11 micrograms, the water, but important as well, phosphate. So if you want to see the phosphorus of this phosphate, you still have to divide it for 3.6. This is now a value for this kind of food meter, which is a little bit at the edge of possibilities of measuring. But the beauty is, it's very constant in its results. So I trust quite a lot in that. If it's going over, 20 micrograms per liter, then usually I see a change in color of the water as well. That's optical result of higher phosphates and therefore growth of monocellular algae. And maybe in seconds, interesting as well. Maybe this is now the these are two Blue Connect Plus, but in this moment in the same water and since a month. Okay, temperature is quite the same. It was measured in the same moment. The redox potential is varying 10%. So you can see it's not so accurate. And the conductivity is, well, it's quite close. If I use my HANA test, the conductivity, I realized it now, it showed more than 1,700 microsiemens, so I have to probably get it adjusted, the other meter of conductivity. Okay, that's what I was able to show.
Thank you, Stefan. Maybe you should say some words more about the last picture, because not everybody knows what is this. These are please do.
Okay, these are they're coming from the chemical pool industry, swimming sensors for pools, which are linked by not Wi-Fi. It's a system called SigFox, which should work nearly all over Europe. And at least we have some areas where it doesn't work. But it gives very good results. They are swimming songs. I don't think I find quickly now the picture. And it's constantly sending me these four values: temperature, pH, the redox potential, and the conductivity. And from these changes, it's interesting, for example, the redox potential, how it changes during the day and how the changes during the day, how strong they are. This, for example, is the redox potential change in a month. These peaks were, there was water added because of the evaporation. For example, this is the pH, how it's moving in a month's time. If you do it daily, you can see sometimes the daily peak. But this, for example, this is a water which is very low in nutrients. It's this 11 milligrams phosphate. So there's not a lot of daily movements. If you have, for example, a water which is richer in nutrients, and you have a lot of plants, for example, the daily change in pH is quite impressive. It can be about 0.3 pH. If it's more, then it's getting risky. And the redox as well is changing with sun, for example, and the activity of biology. It's going up when the algae is very active in the sun, and it's going down in nighttime. Udo, okay. Do you want to add something to the system?
Yeah, I think we have presented here in this group, but as we have some colleagues which are not so often here, I use it a lot. I think we have now 26 ponds equipped with this, and since 1 year, every pond we are doing new will have this BlueConnect Plus system, because it's very useful for prediction of anything. And we have it's open source data, so we were able to write some algorithms. They go into a data base, and we applied some algorithms, and when something is taking a development which is not so good, for example, your ORP redox value here, when it is going lower than 200, when it's going lower than 250 millivolt, we get the signal, we get a certain alert why it's so low. And we have to check why it's so low. I want to mention two things. First of all, Hans and all making some were adding here to the conversation some information, mentioned water value limits and so on. I think we should say where do we get these limits? Where, why do we know that we have to look, watch chlorides or sulfates and so on? Maybe all of you know, but I think we should mention that, that there are a lot of sources where you can find those recommendations or limit values. I think the first point where we can look is in the regulations published in different countries. There are a lot of recommendations for values. And from where do you get your limit value information is a question we should talk about.
Well, I can say I have it from the FALL and from Pond Analyst. Mm. Only in certain values, especially the sulfates, it was discussed in the IOB conference, maybe even twice. And I know that there are, some people say it's not so important, it can be high and the biological system works. The Austrians, especially the information comes from Wolfgang Wiesner, they found problems in fast filters, but only in fast filters. This was their case. They said in fast filters, in biofilm creating fast filters, it may happen that above, I think, 40 or 60 milligram sulfates, the inner part of the biological of the biofilm can get poisoned by sulfates, which are reduction product of the sulfates, because there may be a lack of oxygen, so the biological activity takes out oxygen from the sulfates and poisoning itself by sulfates. And then this biofilm internally dies and big layer of biofilm is floating away with the water pressure. I spoke to Peter Petrich. They said for their internal use, they have 200 milligrams as sulfates limitation. But he said he's not even sure if it's necessary to, if this value might be too low. But when I asked him, are you talking about which kind of model are you talking? Are you talking about fast filters or systems with plants? He said no. He was in general talking, but mainly in thinking in not specifically in fast filters, but more in systems with where the plants have an important role. Mm-hmm. And it seems like plants don't react so.
Yes. Thank you, Stefan. This reminds me to say that we are talking about very detailed stuff at the moment. So if we have some colleagues who are not so in this water quality issue, but want to get there, I highly recommend to read some books about water chemistry, especially the water chemistry of natural lakes. There are some books which in German and English and the main languages, books about limnology, and there's the chapters about minerals in the water. There you can read things that, for example, the sulfate turns into sulfite, and the sulfite is poison, and you have to know when the sulfate is turning into sulfite or sulfite, that I don't know how to pronounce, because then you read that only in absence of oxygen this can happen, and so on and so on. There are a lot of details you have to check, or you have to know. Nowadays, maybe the internet can help as well. But it's not only the question to buy equipment. You have to know what the equipment is telling you, what is to make a good interpretation of the results. And this is as well, once again, a question to James, if he is here, yeah, he's here. If you send your water samples to Austria, do you get an interpretation and a recommendation, or you get only the results? Stefan, you have to.
Yeah, we get both.
Both. Okay.
Yeah, we get, and we also we do. You know, I have a couple of pools, regular traditional chemical pools that we build. I've been doing that for forever. And we have two retail stores where we sell swimming pool chemicals, chlorine, et cetera. And we do extensive water testing in those stores on chemical pools. So we're very proficient at testing for chlorine, total free chlorine, pH, total alkalinity, or carbonate hardness, calcium hardness, pH, acid demand, alkali demand, copper, iron, manganese, total dissolved solids, which is basically conductivity, and some other parameters. And we test phosphate with the photometric system. We've also been experimenting with that Blue Connect that you were talking about. And there's also another product here that is made by Hayward. It's a U.S. manufactured product that we've been using, and we have deployed that in several different pools. So, you know, that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We also use the FLL for the parameters of water quality that we're looking for. And when we send samples to Austria, they do come back with both what the values are and what the recommendations are. This is too high. This is too low. This is sideways. This is good for a swim pond, but not for a natural pool. This is okay for a natural pool.
We did not talk about bacteria. Does anyone make assessment of biological parameters like Escherichia coli and others?
I never did it.
I know how to do it well, more or less. It's not so complicated, but it needs small equipment.
Mm. Okay, we do this
laboratory.
Yeah, yeah, we do that. We do it, but not at home. We do it with the laboratory. But this results, and we do not do it in every swimming pond, but in some tourist use ones. And we do it in the, I think in the moment it's four bigger ones. We have monitoring contracts. That means we make water testing, regular water testing. We have the Blue Connects. And a laboratory is checking the bacteria, and we do a monthly report. I don't know if anybody from you has project like this, monitoring project. And I know Stefan Bruns has a lot of monitoring projects, but this is maybe not so common only for the bigger ones. But what about the one in Minneapolis, James? Do you know, or do you make there any monitoring about the quality?
No, we don't. They do. Minneapolis.
They do.
The city of Minneapolis has its own internal laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
City has for many, many years had public ponds. They're not they are constructed, but they're not Schwimmteich, but they are ponds that people swim in and that are available to the public. And they've been monitoring the water quality in those for many, many years. And they use their own laboratory to do that. They have their own internal health department at the Parks and Recreation, or the park board there. So, yes, they do monitor it. I do get that data periodically. Get to see what it is. But we don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have this monitoring project, and I can say this as well from Stefan Bruns' company. They do it a lot because it's something like the after sale quality management. And our clients who made these monitoring projects with us are interested that we do the checking and give the interpretation, and as well we train the staff who is doing the regular cleaning. We are talking here about swimming ponds, which have, the biggest one has more than 400 users per day, the second has 250, and the other two are a bit smaller, less than 100 users a day. But it's a question of backup for them, that all the information goes to our office, and that we make a monthly report. We don't do it the year round. It's normally only along the swimming period, 6 to 8 months a year. And this is helping us as well in designing new projects, because we learn a lot about it, about the performance, about the using, about potential difficulties and all these things. So if you have a bigger tourist project, I highly recommend you to try to get a monitoring contract, because in a way you get paid for your development costs. It's very interesting.
How much does it cost to you, the monitoring of the project?
Yeah, it costs that I have a monthly visit. This may be a travel cost. It's at least one working day to go there to check, to talk to the people, and as well to observate the users. It's very interesting. How do the users use what you have designed? It's very interesting. This is a working day, and at least another working day for the laboratory and the interpretation. So it's for swimming pond maybe 2 days work, and in summer we have until 4 monitoring projects in parallel. So it's a lot of work. Claudia, do you want to say something about it?
Yeah, we do not charge a lot of money, because for us as well, especially in the first year, it is quite interesting to give them, let me say in a way, a boost to start working with their new equipment. And what we observed is that especially to manage the different groups working for example, in a hotel project, there are the gardeners, there are the technical maintenance, there is the pond maintenance, and sometimes to see what are the difficulties in between is sometimes very helpful to understand why things are maybe not working as we thought. For example, the gardeners think it's so nice to plant new plants really at the border of the pond. And then we see that the flowers are hanging over, are entering the pond surface, and then we have to ask them to cut it back, to prune regularly the plants. So they are not happy with these kind of instructions, but it's as well sometimes that we notice that there was a kind of disrespect. They planted it too close, but then if you don't say what they have to do, things are not working as we want that they work. So there are a lot of synergy effects, not always so positive as we want. So to have a look at it, because the owner sometimes is not able, he knows what one should do and he has instructions and so on. But there are sometimes little details, and therefore it is really very helpful to have a look on it. And then it's a question if you want to continue, but for the first year, I highly recommend to do something like that. What is our experience now is that the clients are very happy with this kind of accompanying the project as well over long term. And yeah, for them it is very helpful to have this this support from the architects, as well for the performance of the pond, and as well to communicate why it is behaving as it is. So for them it's helpful to make their publicity, to communicate with the clients, to give information, and so on and so on. So it, and it is a different thing to talk about this kind of accompanying during the project phase or during construction or when you have it in place, because then they have a real connection. It is not only theory, it is much more practical. Yeah, what are we doing more? We are doing as well a mapping of the vegetation to see if everything develops as it should be, if something is missing, if we do all the checking of the technical equipment, as well the technical construction, if there is a problem. And sometimes it is, yeah, something unforeseen one has to check. Yeah, for example, changes in the gardens around might cause really trouble. And there are things that's very helpful to accompany. And we are writing a monthly report, and we are putting as well data about the water analysis development along the months. What Udo was saying, and a little bit was what Stefan was showing, but we have it in a different database so that we can show the curves, the graphs along the month, and as well making comparison during for the year and so on. We are doing as well the interpretation and as well interpretation of the hygienical analysis, as in comparison with the values for public swimming pond, a swimming pond, sorry. Yeah.
And this brings, we are a bit far away now from the laboratory subject in water analysis, but maybe this brings us to the idea for another meeting like this to ask, for example, Stefan Bruns to present what they do in their monitoring, or even to ask Jürgen Spieker, who has as well a monitoring system in public swimming ponds in Germany, to present us what monitoring can do. And we could make this a subject here if it's interesting. Coming back now to our main subject, I think it was a good introduction into what every swimming pond designer can do, and there are some are working with well equipped and good working laboratories. Others do it by their own. This is one result. I think we are together now 1.5 hours. We open now the last round about this laboratory subject. Anybody wants to ask or to add information?
I would. I have only one remark. When you test existing ponds, it's quite obligatory to test phosphate total, not only orthophosphate. And with this simple instrument, you are not able to measure phosphate total. Then you must cook it, and it's a good procedure with this Hach Lange. You can do it. There are equipments you can measure the phosphate, and it's very important, because the phosphor who is included in the microorganism, you must then count also, because when you have only the orthophosphate, only the liquid phosphate, that's no result. It's something, but it's not important. You must always measure phosphor total.
Yes, this is true what you're telling us. But as Stefan said, there is when you're testing a lot and when you know your pond, I think by experience the eventual changes in the autophosphate can give you as well a hint. But in generally you are right, Hans. I have there an outlook what would we could do in future. There is an equipment and who has been in Poland and Warsaw at the conference has seen this equipment. Nowadays there are a type of, I think they are well as well, well, it's a laser technique which you can measure the chlorophyll A in the water. They are mobile equipment, and one presenter, a professor in Warsaw, has shown this equipment, and you can measure on site the chlorophyll A in the water. And if you measure with this equipment the chlorophyll A, you can use a simple calculation and calculate directly the total phosphorus. Unfortunately, this very nice equipment this professor had costs in Europe about 10,000 euros. And this is, for me, it's not affordable. It's too high only for one parameter. But I think in future times, as all this electronic equipment is getting always cheaper, and I have seen similar equipment for about 5,000 euros, we will mainly check chlorophyll A because it's a mobile equipment. It's very reliable. And when you check chlorophyll A, you can immediately calculate the total phosphorus, and it is a very, very good value which give you direct information about the trophic situation of your swimming pond.
Well,
but this will come the next year.
But you can't measure the phosphate in the bacteria, and you have also a lot of bacteria in the world. And with chlorophyll A, you can measure them. That they don't have chlorophyll A in the bacteria, and the part in the bacteria, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
But it's not easy. It's not so difficult to measure the total phosphate. You must buy the equipment. It costs about one piece, costs maybe 5 euro, and that's it. When you have such a Hutch Hachlange, if this one, for example, or that, what you have, with that you can measure it. It's very good. It's not difficult.
January. Okay. So we meet 27th of January. Yeah.
Yeah.